If you have a kid or a family member who identifies as anything other than heterosexual, then you already know that life for them is different. Maybe you grew up in a super accepting environment, so when they came out, it was no big deal. But maybe it was a shock. Maybe you didn't know what to think, how to respond, how to act. Today, we're talking about living with queer youth. What should you understand, or what do you need to know when your teen or young adult identifies anywhere on the LGBTQ+ spectrum? Our guide is Colin Baker, a licensed professional counselor and family therapist at Sandstone Care. I'm Clint Malley, and this is Real Common Treatable, where we break down overcoming mental health and substance use challenges in simple, everyday language. First, I'll let Colin explain exactly what they mean by queer youth.
For the families of queer adolescents, so for their parents, for their siblings, if there's additional family members living with them, that as well. That's what more I mean. And when I say living with queer youth, I'm also trying to talk about how being queer is going to be very different than from people who are like cisgendered or heterosexual, and what life might look like differently for them, and what the expectation might be different, and then therefore how the expectation or the anticipation of their future might require a different approach than the expectation or anticipation of other people's futures.
Now, there are some specific things that are worth talking about right off the bat. Like, how do you talk to your teen or young adult about this stuff, and what kind of pronouns should you use?
So some of the things that come to mind are like when these queer adolescents are in families and they are exploring their gender identities and they're exploring any aspect of their identity, really, and they're starting to make changes in their lives. So using different names or using different pronouns. And then they are also asking their family members to engage with their names and engage with their pronouns. It becomes a struggle when that doesn't happen. And that is when that adversity gets actually experienced. So it's when my child comes to me and tells me that their name is no longer what I'd been calling them, that they would like to now go by, we'll say Arrow, right? I've actually known a couple of Arrows. I think it's a great name too. And I'm like, that's a cool name. I'd like to go by Arrow. My pronouns are now they, them. Every time that I then refer to Arrow by not their name that they have now given me or not their pronouns that they have now given to me, that's a hurt. That's a pain for my child, basically. And that builds up. It can build up at the very least, especially if it's not treated with like the level of intensity or respect that they are bringing it to me with.
Maybe you're thinking, they're young. What if this is just a phase? Is this really worth taking seriously? I mean, you were there since they were a baby. Can they really expect you to call them something different after all these years? Well, as Colin explains, this stuff, it really matters.
If I'm like, okay, this is just like another phase. And I know that we had talked a little bit about phases, and it's like, yes, I was not there to see the emo phase. Yes, I was not there to see the cowboy hat and cowboy boots phase. And ultimately, if those phases did not have negative impacts, this phase itself is also not going to have a negative impact, most likely, if it is a phase. And if it's not, by not addressing it the way that it deserves, we run the risk of really causing some damage, not just to my relationship with my child, but also to my child with their relationship to themselves, honestly, and how they're going to be able to relate to other people out in the world, too.
Really, what this comes down to is support and independence. For example, think about a spouse that decides to not take their partner's last name. What should you do? Well, if you support that person, you call them by the name that they connect with. You are affirming their humanity. You are telling them that what they want to call themselves, that it matters.
Yes, absolutely. That's a huge factor to this. It requires a level of independence for me to be able to even like name and ask for a different name for my parents or a different pronouns for my parents. Yeah, that's a huge part of this, 100%.
Also, if someone gets married and they change their name, what's required is the effort to say that new name. Maybe they'll get divorced in 10 years, but it doesn't really matter, does it? They change their name and they expect the world to accept this new identity with marriage. And people have no problem doing this. And this is because, as a culture, we've decided that names really matter.
I love that you brought up the marriage example, because I think that's a wonderful example of when someone else tells me that's not their name anymore, it is absolutely the expectation that I respect that. If someone's like, oh no, I'm Mrs. Mitchell now, I'm not going to be like, okay, Miss Robin. It's a disrespectful thing to do. However, I know so many people who don't have that or don't carry that same level of respect for transgender people, and particularly for transgender youth. That statement oftentimes gets dismissed. It oftentimes gets like swept under the rug or just pushed aside. And I really want to highlight that that's very damaging when we do that. In my most recent work, I am seeing a lot of improvement. I'm seeing a lot of flexibility. I'm seeing a lot of willingness to listen, and I'm seeing a lot of comfort with discomfort, which is ultimately what this is. And I really appreciate you naming that comfort piece. If I've been doing something for 16 years and then suddenly someone's like, nope, you got to change now and you're not allowed to do it again like that ever again. It's, I'm really used to this. I don't know how easily I'm just going to be able to like switch like that. And I want to offer like some compassion to it. If I'm a parent and my 16-year-old is coming to me, my 13-year-old is coming to me, my 9-year-old is coming to me, I've still been doing something for 9 years, 13 years, 16 years, calling them by the name that I know them as. And they come to me and ask me, I would like to go by a different name, and this is why. I'm going to probably struggle with that shift. It's probably not going to be an immediate level of comfort where I'm like, oh, yeah, perfect. Okay, fantastic. I can do that. If you can do that, fantastic. I absolutely want to encourage you to do it. And if you struggle, it's okay. It's okay to have a hard time with the adjustment. And I want to encourage some exploration of like, how come I'm having a hard time with this adjustment? And for a lot of parents, if that's the case, you're allowed to have those feelings. Like, that is okay to feel this way. And I want to offer still that while thinking about that, it's also important that we think about what are then the consequences of me acting on these feelings towards my own child.
We might think that when someone asks you to call them by a different name or pronoun, that it's a conflict. But really, what Colin wants us to know is that it's actually an invitation.
I know we had talked about in the last podcast that I was on about how naming my identity for you, telling you my name, telling you my pronouns is an invitation for you to know me better, for you to join me, for you to continue with me in life through whatever experiences I am having. And I just want to highlight again, that is still the case. Like, it is still an invitation to know us better. It's still an invitation to join me in my world, in my life, for me to tell you my name.
Here, I asked Colin to explain the mindset of someone who's built up the courage to go by a different name, to come out, or to state who they really are.
My initial desire is to paint it as, for a lot of people, the mindset is life or death. I do this or I die. Or part of me dies, and I'm the one killing it. And I can't speak for that being the intensity for everybody. And I have known that that has been the intensity for a lot of people. Where it's like, if I don't start making this change, if I'm not living authentically, then I'm not living. And I don't know how long I can do that. And I don't say that to like scare people. And I don't say that to try and paint the trans experience as a trans experience of suicide. That's not the idea here. The idea is that it's a call for life. It's like a plea for it, basically. Please see me as alive. Let me live. Literally, let me live as me. And let me be able to be me and be like out there as me, like out in the world, and be out in the world as me, and then come back now home and also be able to be me and be safe here when I'm not necessarily going to be safe out there.
We know that families disagree. They think and act differently because they are different people, even if they share the same DNA and blood. And these differences, whether that's religious, political, or whatever, might also be the thing that helps us understand what it's like to be someone who wants to be accepted for their gender identity, like for transgender folks, for example.
I see personally a lot of parallels between all of adolescence and the transgender experience, right? Any coming of age, any sort of coming to understanding oneself, any sort of gaining of identity, right? If you've ever had a conversation with your family that your religion and their religion are different, if you've ever had a conversation with your family about your career goals and their ideas about your career are different, if you've ever had a conversation with your family about your political ideas and their political ideas being different, and still wishing to be together, there's a lot of parallel in that. Not in the level of intensity necessarily, but still I see that that's where there is space to expand upon those emotions to gather and gain some of this understanding.
Okay, let's make this practical and use a religious comparison. Put yourself in this situation.
If I was raised Catholic and I'm telling my family that this doesn't fit for me, that this is not for me, that this is not my identity, this is not how I understand things, this is not how I see the world, this is not where my belief system lies, that could go very poorly. And it can take a lot of courage to do that. Like, I do not envy my friends who have had to tell their Catholic parents that they are no longer Catholic or that they don't believe in Catholicism, like specifically. Not that religion has authority and ownership over this experience. I could do this, we could talk about this with just any sort of religious belief or even non-religious beliefs. Telling my atheist family that I am a follower of Christ can be a very difficult conversation for people. And that's where I try to find space. And I would try literally anywhere. I'm like, have you ever had a hard conversation with somebody? At any point in your life, have you ever had to tell like a car dealership that you don't want their car? Even that, like it's a mini conflict in someone's perspective, and we can still identify that the emotions taking place there might be something that we could expand upon and see elsewhere.
Sometimes people might think, yo, that's fine. Believe what you want. Just don't push that off on me. Don't expect me to call you by a certain pronoun or accept a different gender identity. But in mainstream culture, we view this as a choice. But, and I'll admit, this is where I started to get a little bit choked up. Can't we all, at some level, understand the agony of not being accepted for who we are?
I think I'd like to expand a little bit on that. How come it's seen as a choice outside of the LGBT community? Because I think you're absolutely right. And I think for a very long time, there has been this expectation of sacrifice of self from a lot of people. And I don't just see that within queer communities. I also see that in cisgendered, heterosexual, or heteronormative communities. I know that this is like, I'm going to draw some from some pop culture references, right? Footloose as an example. I know we're going way back on this one, but it's like, if you just want to dance and you're not allowed to dance, you have to give that up. There's been this theme of self-sacrifice in heteronormativity across the board. A lot of what we like within the queer community, a lot of the queer activism is not just designed as like a liberation for queer people. It's also a liberation for non-queer people. It is a permission for everybody to be their authentic selves, to be a freeing of presenting any way you don't want to present, working in any field you don't want to work in, being someone you don't want to be, as long as we're not like harming other people and coming from a place of love. That's ideally what this is for. Like, this being gender equality, this being sexuality equality, this being any of the equity, actually, more than equality, the equity that is going into the work that we are doing now is not just designed as like exclusive and explicitly for queer people. This is for everybody. Alok Menon is an influencer. They have written a book. If you're familiar with who they are, I think they're a really cool person. They do a lot of fashion that has historically, I would say, not been considered fashionable. And they explore that and they name it. And they're like, I dress the way that I dress because I like bright colors and I like loud patterns. And I have always liked that. I get reactions from this from other people. And a lot of what I try to respond with is like how something in you is being irritated by something about me. And whatever that is, maybe we need to love it more.
Okay, if you've been tuning out in your day-to-day life while you've been listening to this or watching this, I want you to really focus because I think this is something that is not being talked about enough and something that everyone needs to hear.
How come identity is seen as a choice by so many people? In my mind, it means that they have chosen their identities, or that they themselves were not given that choice.
I'm sorry, but did you just hear that? Oftentimes, when we limit other people's identity as a sense of choice, it's because you at some point said that you were something in this world and it didn't accept you either. Or you were not given the option, the choice, the ability to even think that you could say who you are.
And for me, that's where I see a lot of this potential harm and damage being able to be mitigated. If I'm a parent and I am, which in and of itself is, was this a choice? Was this not a choice? That like dichotomy of choice within parenting, even becoming a parent in the first place, is an oversimplification of the actus of becoming parents. There was lots of choices happened going up to that standpoint, and lots of choices happen all the time. But there's still, I think, this expectation like, oh no, you chose this, therefore you have to be okay with everything about it. And it's like, not necessarily. And I may have chosen parts of this, whatever this is, and not other parts. And maybe we can work to change those parts that I didn't choose, work to change those parts I'm not okay with. For argument's sake, if I did choose to be transgender, I did not choose for other people to dislike that. That's not my choice. I do not choose which slurs I get called. I do not choose if I get assaulted. Those are not my choices. Those are the choices of other people, right? My choice, going back to that Brené Brown piece, that vulnerability piece, that courage piece, is to be that authentic self and to be that authentic self around other people. And my curiosity would be, and this would be for like cisgendered heterosexual parents or even queer parents or parents in general, what choices have you made? What choices are you still making? What choices were you not allowed to make? Did you have a choice? Or did you feel like you had a choice to not be a parent? Do you feel like you had a choice to not get married and live a happy and like fulfilling life?
We all know about the standard way that life is expected to go when someone is growing up in this world, right? Like, first you do this and then you do that. You go to school, you get a job, or you go to college, that kind of thing. Well, there's a process called the relationship escalator, where even though many people think of it as a normal way to progress in commitment, it is denied to people of the LGBTQ+ population, where it's only recently been accepted.
There's a concept called the relationship escalator, where it's you meet, you start dating, you keep dating, you get married, you have kids, and those are your choices. And that is one way. We call that escalator because you get on it and it just takes you right on up to those next levels. And for a lot of queer people, that's not the case. For a very long time, literally up until 2015, marriage wasn't even on the table. Okay, it was a couple of times, and then it wasn't again, and then it was. So it's like really inconsistently up until 2015, where it is now federally legal. So we have only now had roughly 6 years of the idea of same-sex marriage. And that's it. 6 years. There are toddlers who have known nothing else, and there are 12-year-olds who have only had this for half of their life. There are 24-year-olds who have only had this for a quarter of their life. When I'm talking about, this is what I'm talking about when I was talking about living with queer youth, when I was talking about what is life like for queer youth and how might that be different than life for non-queer youth. This is one of those examples, because only up until very recently was the idea of marriage even an option. When we think about what are their choices, oh, they're going to grow up, they're going to start dating, they're going to get married, they're going to have kids. Okay, they can grow up and they can start dating, but that marriage piece was never even an option. So this perceived path already could not take place. So there had to be these alternatives. And as parents, having our minds open to alternatives is going to be almost critical to being able to make sure that those alternatives are safe and effective in whatever they're going to look like.
Okay, so maybe you're realizing that you have some room to grow. How do you love your teen or your young adult or your family member who is queer? How do you support them so that they have choices?
I would like human beings to think about that it's okay to be who someone needs you to be, even if that is not how you expect it to be needed. And it is okay to listen. And it is okay to feel. And it's okay to be scared. And it's okay for this to be hard. And it's okay to do it anyway. Do those hard pieces, do those scary pieces. And in like, we're gonna go back to Brené Brown. And it's okay to do a shitty job the first time and do better next time and better the next time and better the next time. I wanna just free people of this idea of perfection. You're not a perfect parent any more than you are already a perfect parent. You don't have to be anything other than what you already are. You are not a perfect kid outside of you are already a perfect kid. You do not have to be anything other than how you already are. Coming with love, coming with compassion for yourself and for others.
You matter because you exist. Through some great miracle, through the insane possibility of combinations and chain reactions that needed to occur to bring you here, you are a human being, and that means that you deserve love. And if someone identifies as anything other than straight, they deserve love too. We can break the cycle of oppression in how we love and stick up for those who have the courage to be their true selves, to be their real selves, to be who they are. Listen, y'all. We know that parenting or having a family member who is queer is real, but it's more common than you think. And best of all, if you have worries, anxieties, and fears about it, it's also treatable. All my love. We'll see you on the next episode.